And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and with me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
Today we're going to be talking to the former Prime Minister of Rwanda, Faustin Twagiri Mungu, who lives in Brussels, and we're going to be asking him about the recent assassination of a former high-ranking official in the present government in Rwanda. It seems to have caught the world's attention. It's a horrible event. We'll be asking about that and also some historical background from the former Prime Minister of Rwanda, Faustin Twagiri Mungu. And at the halfway point, we will be talking with Eva Bartlett, who is a journalist, activist, and she has lived for a period of time in Gaza and has been giving talks around Canada. She's going to be touring the United States. So that's Eva Bartlett, and we'll be asking her about Gaza. And also, she was one of those who helped to bring Mother Agnes Mariam to Canada and to the U.S., a very important visit. Agnes Mariam, Mother Agnes Mariam from Syria, was doing her best to contribute to what we hope will be a peaceful resolution of that conflict. Now, Phil, while we're waiting here, I think you have an announcement.
Yes, there is a film this Wednesday night. It is at the Robarts Library at the University of Toronto on the third floor, and it is the media commons room, and it is called Inside Buffalo. It is a documentary from an Afro-Italian filmmaker, and it's about the Buffalo Soldiers, as they were called in Italy, which was the segregated black-only units of the U.S. Army that took part in the liberation of Italy in World War II. That's free at 7 o'clock this Thursday night at the Robarts Library Media Commons Room on the third floor. They do want you to RSVP, so if you could just write to them at italian.studies@utoronto.ca and tell them you're coming.
And the date and the power?
And the date is Thursday the 23rd, 7 p.m. And there'll be a question and answer after the film.
And what is that place?
That is the Media Commons Room at the Robarts Library at the corner of St. George and Harvard.
And the title is Buffalo?
Inside Buffalo.
That's it.
That's the title. Inside Buffalo.
Right. Yeah. That is a very important story. A number of African-American writers have dealt with this subject.
Of course, but this is interesting. This is an Italian black man dealing with it from an Italian perspective.
By the way, I want to thank our listeners. They're taking a keen interest in our interview with Norman Otis Richmond. We thank him for being our guest because we memorialized the late Amiri Baraka. And this was a subject, the Buffalo Soldiers, as they were called, throughout American history, actually. Since from the Civil War on, there was a phenomenon of the Buffalo Soldiers. Very important story. I could tell you too that Amiri Baraka has been remembered in a brilliant article and talk by Glenn Ford at Black Agenda Report, and I think it nicely matches or complements the interview we did last week with Norman Otis Richmond. Here is a guy with a tremendous career in literature and politics pan-African solidarity. And he was he touched every part of people's lives. An important artist, not just a man who is known for his poetry, known for his plays, short stories, etc., but somebody who what he had to say resonated through the population. And not for profit. It was prophetic. It was not the money side of it. But people would hear about Amiri Baraka from all quarters. Again, we expect to be in touch shortly with Faustin Twagiri Mungu. We want to ask him about this recent the January 1st assassination of Colonel Patrick Karagewa. And I think I mispronounced that. I'm sorry. Karagea. And so Patrick Karagea is important because his personal story helps anyone who wants to understand the events of Rwanda, and we're coming up for the 20th anniversary of the war and massacres and the seizure of power by the present government, led by President Paul Kagame. And Patrick Garagiwa was there for every step of this phenomenon. And we have tried to emphasize in talking about Rwanda over the years that you have to take into account neighboring state of Uganda, that the present leader of Uganda, Museveni, came to power with soldiers, many of whom were from the Rwanda expatriate community. Patrick Karegeya was one of those individuals. He goes way, way back. He was with Museveni before Paul Kagame was. The two of them became major figures in the military of Uganda. So when you ask, oh, what happened in Rwanda, you have to ask, what happened in Uganda? And there was an invasion. Sometimes the New York Times and others use the word insurrection or some such thing, or insurgency. No, it was an invasion in October 1st, 1990. Colonel Patrick Kagame is quite eloquent on this and tells the whole story in detail. We're seeing, with his assassination, we're seeing an interesting reconfiguration of people as to where their alliance is. Over the years, the sponsor of the invasion, Uganda, particularly in the form of the president, President Museveni, has been both angry with and sometimes very friendly to Paul Kagame and his government in Rwanda. For example, showing the contemporary situation, when Patrick Kagame was assassinated in Johannesburg, South Africa, his body was found there on January 1st of this year. The family, he has a very large family, including his mother who survives him, who live in southwest Uganda, and they asked for his body to be returned to them for burial. And the government of Uganda at first said yes, and then they had a change of heart, and then they decided he wasn't a Ugandan. And so they never said they were why, but they changed their position, and they would not allow his return to be buried by his family in Uganda, which raises a lot of questions, some of them rhetorical. One of the rhetorical questions is, why are you afraid of this guy, of this? He's now deceased. The answer, you know, is that apparently there is a struggle in the region, and governments are careful about their relations with the present government of Rwanda. Additionally to this, should be noted that the government of Tanzania has taken a keen interest, of course, in Rwanda, and the fighting led by or involving Rwandan troops and money and personnel and weapons, etc., in Congo. Recently, the president of Tanzania, Mr. Kikwete, suggested openly, publicly, that there be a dialogue between those opposing President Kagame in Congo, East Congo, and the government of Rwanda. And the reaction was a public threat by the president of Rwanda to the president of Tanzania. It wasn't noted here because Canada is trying to play its usual kind of game, hiding in the clouds, as it were, waiting to decide what to do. But that, in relations between countries, personal threats between heads of state can lead to really rapid and unfortunate consequences, which is another reason we are following this so closely. And we hope again to be talking to Faustin Twagirimungu. I'll remind you, our listeners, by the way, this is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM, and not so many months ago, we did speak to Faustin Twagirimungu. Faustin leads a movement now called the Rwandan Dream Initiative, RDI. You can follow the views of Faustin Twagirimungu and his organization. They have a site the letters are, I'm sure I'll find it here in a moment. But at any rate, if you were to go to Rwandan Dream Initiative, actually, Phil, you must notice this. It's looking things up on the internet. A lot of times we say, oh, give me the exact, letters. And if you just write the words in Google, they will find it faster.
That Google is almost reading your mind, and you'll type in a few letters, and it gives you quite often exactly what you're looking for, and if not exactly, a few more letters, and then it gives you a few choices, and it gets easier and easier to find.
Mm-hmm. We may be having difficulty, or we may not succeed today in reaching Faustin. I understand he indicated to me when I talked to him that he was going to be going to a meeting, but expected to be available. And we'll do our best. In the meantime, let's touch on a couple of other matters that I know our listeners are probably interested in. You drew a breath like you're going to say something. No? Okay.
Well, I always say something. But
yeah,
no,
you're always ready. All right. Let me continue on with what I know about the Rwanda story, and I'll try to just make it news to you, and then if we get Prime Minister Twagirimungu, we do, and if we don't, we don't. On January the 1st, Colonel Patrick Aregea's body, was found at a hotel in Johannesburg, and the world was quite shocked. He had been recently speaking to Radio France International, the British paper The Independent. Of course, people were quite interested in him because he was the former director of intelligence and with a long career. So people understand that when he tells you something, you might not believe him. But on the other hand, he's a significant player. It's like a former Secretary of State of the United States. Or, Mr. Gates has just written his memoir. Well, everybody's interested in Mr. Gates. Mr. Aregea was writing and speaking. Now, one of the things he had said, and I underline for the listeners of the Taylor Report, and we follow Rwanda very closely. But one of the things Patrick Aregea said was that he was sure that the present leader of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, was responsible for the shooting down of the plane of carrying two African heads of state, President Habyarimana of Rwanda and President Ntaryamira of Burundi, and as well as the chief of the Rwandan army, General Sabimana. And so that incident, he said, triggered the fighting and the move to seize power by the Rwandan Patriotic Front. He's echoed in that by another well-known general, now a critic, opponent of President Paul Kagame, who's also a general. I mean, you can't be anything in that country without being a general. And that general's name is Yamwasa. Now, General Yamwasa was himself the target of an assassination in 2010 in South Africa. Try to remember how important that is. These are exiles. These are refugees from Rwanda. They are under the protection of the state, just as you would be anywhere on the earth if you're in exile. The state doesn't permit a foreign state to send agents to murder you. If they do such a thing, those agents will be apprehended, and there's going to be problems between the two states. And there was a problem between the government of South Africa and the government of Rwanda over the attempted assassination, which was a very determined effort to get General Yamwasa in 2010. He was wounded, and the attackers persisted in trying to get him. I mean, they not only they wounded him and he was taken to the hospital, they followed to the hospital with further assassins, went there to see if they could finish him. Six people were put on trial, and that trial is coming to a conclusion in March in the sense that a decision will be rendered. Three of them are Tanzanian nationals, and three of them are Rwandans. Of course, General Yamwasa himself and Colonel Patrick Karegeya both said unequivocally, in their opinion, it was simply an assassination attempt. And it was. It shows what kind of regime they are opposing, and it has as a as another target of an assassination attempt said to the London paper, The Independent. President Paul Kagame seems to have a license to kill. I don't know who gave him the license. I know that he is a close personal advisor, by all accounts, is Tony Blair. Who last week I called him Bill Blair, and I'm still embarrassed, but Tony Blair is a close personal advisor. So I want to know to Tony, I'm asking Tony Blair, did you advise that, the attempt on Yamwasa? Did you advise the murder of Karegeya? I would just like to know, because you have the title, close personal advisor. Please tell us how you regard this. It's kind of important now. A second individual who is close to Paul Kagame is former President Bill Clinton. There's a funny sidebar on President Clinton, which I enjoy very much. We're told that Bill Clinton feels he has to be supportive of Paul Kagame because he, Bill Clinton, suffers guilt over not having intervened in 1994 in Rwanda. So that's a nice sentence, except the word guilt. If you know anything about Bill Clinton, guilt is not one of the words that comes to mind. Bill Clinton has a long, colorful history involving matters that might show signs of guilt. And he's never shown any such sign. He's a good old-fashioned type of politician from Arkansas who knows how to fix something and smile at the people who pursue him, who want to get to the bottom of things. Bill Clinton doesn't have a shade of guilt. By the way, he's the president of the United States. At that point, guilt does not factor in. We have a president now, Obama, who gives himself the power to use a drone aircraft to murder people. I mean, it's murder, and including U.S. citizens in Yemen. And I don't see any, little wink of guilt. There's no Lady Macbeth here. She at least tried to wash her hands. I mean, this guy goes to play basketball. That's about it. There's no sign of any guilt. So Bill Clinton and Tony Blair have been propping up Paul Kagame, working very hard. And Paul Kagame seems to know that he can do these little things, and people get knocked off. Now, I move this from January 1st, 2014, when we're still in January, folks. On January the 12th, in Kigali, at a prayer breakfast, look it up, that's Sunday the 12th, and where else are you going to find the president but at a prayer breakfast? He told the congregation, well, people who oppose us, there are consequences. Consequences, really. A man has just been strangled to death. His body has been found in Johannesburg. You're not the president of South Africa. You're the president of Rwanda. So you say there are consequences. And just to add, put fruit on top of this salad, he has a top general. His name is Kabarebe, James Kabarebe. He said, well, don't ask me about somebody who's found strangled on the seventh floor somewhere. Oh, really? This is a president. This is a head of an army in Rwanda. Don't ask me about somebody who'd been found strangled on the seventh floor somewhere. Nobody should, he said. That man, that body is now just stinks, and it's up to the cleaners to get rid of it, he said. This is the head of the Rwandan army following the death of his former pal, close comrade in arms, etc., Mr. Karageya, and then followed by the Minister of Foreign Affairs. Her name is Musha Kibwabo. She decides to go tweeting about this. And so she said, I'm not losing any sleep about this. And so somebody said, she said, enemies get what comes to them. So we're living in an odd world. She was tweeted then in response by the son of Colonel Karageya. He sent her a tweet and said, you mean you advocate the murder of people who you call enemies? And she said, we don't lose any sleep. We don't worry about that. This is the foreign minister of a country. the stench factor began to creep in. So even the United States State Department issued a statement on this matter. And they said, well wait a minute. We are very unhappy at the murder of that individual in South Africa. We thank the government of South Africa for promising to catch anybody who responsible for the murder of this. They call him a former Rwandan official. They didn't say he was an enemy, a traitor, a genocide denier, a skunk. I mean, they said a former official. We don't think that's appropriate that somebody murdered him. And then they said, very clearly, State Department spokesperson, this is on the 17th of January, said, and we're troubled by the president of Rwanda using the word consequences in referring to this death of Colonel Karageya.
What is that they say, and something will get you a cup of coffee. But it does show that, that maybe somebody is finally realizing, this is not going to go on. It can't go on. I mean, this is, as our guest on today, not with us, Fostan Twagiramungu has said, look, enough is enough. It's finally reached a point, you can't behave like this. By the way, those two guys were pals. I mean, they worked together. And they, as somebody, the guy at the London Independent said, they overthrew two governments. They overthrew the government of Uganda, Mr. Obote, and they overthrew the government of Rwanda. They were together. And I invite you, please, go and look up Colonel Patrick Karageya, because he spoke to all these matters. He came clean with the world, as it was. He said, here's what I did, here's what I didn't do, here's what I'm saying needs to be corrected. He's now being, of course, the government of Rwanda wants to call him a terrorist, and they want all kinds of. However, he has only said this government has to be removed. It should be, and he belongs to a united front of various Rwandan organizations who say, let's negotiate this thing, because what you have is a centralization of power that is obscene. It's reached a point where, you ought to have the kind of government the people were promised in 1994, where it was going to be a multi-party system. And of course, one of the reasons we wish to speak, and we will at some point again to Fostan Twagiramungu, is that he was going to be the prime minister. Well, after the seizure of power, Fostan Twagiramungu was placed as a prime minister, and Mr. Seth Sendashanga, his close friend, was placed as the minister of the interior. However, after 1 year, they both felt so endangered, Seth Sendashanga raised the issue of the massacre at a internal refugee camp called Kibeho, where thousands were killed. And a Canadian Army officer, by the way, testifies to that, in case anybody has any confusion. Tusano, look it up, said thousands were killed there by an army bent on destroying that camp and killing people. To break it, just to get rid of it. And Seth Sendashanga was the Minister of Interior. He felt very self conscious because he had many friends and relatives in that camp, among other things. Any Rwandan would. It's a small country. And so he asked that something be done. Now, at that time, the president was not Paul Kagame. He was a called the second vice president. But it turned out he had a lot of influence. He had the kind of influence that said, you either stop saying that or you will disappear. So they left the country. Faustin Twegeri-Mungu went to Belgium. Sessan Dashanga went to Nairobi. And Sessan Dashanga, in 1997, was shot and nearly killed. And his friend and driver, pardon me, his nephew, was killed, died of his wounds. The person who pulled the trigger was captured. He had the gun with him. He was in the Rwandan embassy in Kenya. Now, while that was being argued about, the role of Rwanda in the attempted assassination of Sendashanga in 1998, I believe it was May, he was finished off. And he and his driver were blown away in downtown Nairobi. And so this is what was the beginning, you might say, of this particular mode of political struggle. And people should remember, because this, the evidence has been right there in front of us for anybody who wanted to see it, what kind of operation President Kagame runs. And we're now about to find out, I guess, whether this is all going to be how long this show gets to go on, that is, of Paul Kagame.
Phil, can I just interrupt and ask a quick question? What is the South African government saying about all this? They must not be pleased about this activity.
They're not pleased.
Going on,
but
in this
I think
world.
We're going to have a moment of truth here, yeah. Because poor Kenya, you know, Kenya never convicted anyone of the assassination of Sessan Dashanga. People may know the name. My goodness, can't say her name offhand. You never challenge yourself for a memory. But at any rate, a major Human Rights Watch individual who testified at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, Alison DeForge, she said that the government of Rwanda had murdered Sessan Dashanga. She thought there should be something done about it. So South Africa, the question is, well, are they going to do something? See, they know about Mr. Blair. They know about Mr. Clinton. When you go to see Paul Kagame, you go to see Mr. Blair and Mr. Clinton. So they say the question they have for you is, how much trouble would you like? Because we can make problems for you. And governments think about these things when they. But at the moment, I would say that since they've got the green light from the U.S. State Department, U.S. State Department says, please get to the bottom of it. There seems to be quite a trail of evidence. By the way, he was, I got to emphasize, it's pretty brutal stuff. He was strangled by a team, an organized group of guys who, that's their specialty. And I remember former chief of the Bank of Rwanda, his name was Dusabe, Pasteur Dusabe. He was strangled to death in Cameroon. The world looked at their nails and cast their eyes aside. But a team hit him. So it's a technique, not to be, and no one should be surprised. So we've used up our time to inform you about these events. I do urge you check out the name Faustin Twegeri-Mungu, or the Rwanda Dream Initiative, and you will see there the reports. Particularly, you should read the report in the British paper, The Independent, which gives a very independent report, which seems to point the arrow at the president of Rwanda. And they do ask the question, okay, when's this going to be brought to an end, this kind of stuff? You know, it's, again, you assassinate somebody, but then you crow at a prayer meeting about it. How do governments continue to align themselves with you when you openly seem to be bragging that you just murdered a guy in somebody else's country?